Good morning, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This year, the Milwaukee Film Festival, which is going on right now, is paying special tribute to documentary filmmaker Alex Gibney. He's best known for his Academy Award-winning film, Taxi to the Dark Side, about the use of torture in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Guantanamo Bay. His new film looks at the history of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. And it pays a great deal of attention to Father Lawrence Murphy at St. Francis School in Wisconsin. Here's one of the children abused by Father Murphy, who's now much older, telling his story in the movie.
I felt sick and confused.
Why would a priest do that to me? Is this supposed to be okay? Did I do something wrong? I didn't know.
After it happened, I just left. And I just kept it to myself.
The title of the film is Mea Maxima Culpa, Silence in the House of God. And its director, Alex Gibney, is with us now. He has received many awards. And Alex, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for being with us.
Delighted to be there.
This is a wrenching film. It's a wrenching subject matter, very difficult, very delicate, difficult to take on. Why did you do so?
A couple of reasons. I mean, one, I grew up Catholic, and so this is a subject and a tale that had been reverberating in my head for some time. And I think also, you know, when I read Laurie Goodstein's piece in the New York Times about the Father Murphy story, a few things about it just seemed to come into focus for me. One, it connected the stories of victims in various places around the world to a policy, really, that was being run from the top, that is to say, in Rome. And I think the other thing that was important was that this story had at its heart a number of heroes, and those heroes were the deaf men who tried for almost 30 years to have their voices heard over the abuses that they had suffered. And I think they're now, you know, the film is in a way a vehicle for that attempt.
Mm-hmm. Much of the story nationally started really at the St. Francis School for the Deaf in Wisconsin, didn't it? With the wanted flyers that went out, with the first letter that was written.
Well, in 1974, I believe it was then called the St. John's School for the Deaf in St. Francis, and the a number of flyers were distributed around the cathedral in downtown Milwaukee. And they pointed out that there were wanted flyers for Father Murphy. This was kind of the first public protest that we can that I've been able to ascertain in the United States of America about this issue. So this is kind of ground zero in a way. And as a result of those public protests, meetings, the victims began to have a meeting with Archbishop Cousins, then Archbishop of the Milwaukee Archdiocese.
How many young deaf people, and the other extraordinary thing is the word deaf in this, it's as though you pick somebody who couldn't speak up and talk about the abuse. How many young people, and we're talking about very young boys here, did Father Murphy sexually abuse?
We don't know for sure, but we're fairly certain that the number exceeded 200.
Wow. He was also considered a Pied Piper, you say in the film. Lots of the students loved him. He was a huge money raiser for the school. So how could somebody like that be such a criminal?
Well, you know, I think that we find this is more often the rule than the exception. Very often, particularly when it comes to predators like this, you often find that these people are not sort of retiring, hide in the shadows kind of people. They're extraordinarily bright, charismatic people with one rather fatal flaw. And so you see it quite often. And it's that charisma, actually, which allows them, in a way, to do what they do mm-hmm. and to get away with it. There was another priest we chronicle in this story in Ireland.
Yes.
Named Tony Walsh, who was known as the singing priest. And actually, he was quite popular throughout Ireland for his dead-on Elvis Presley impersonations. And that kind of jokey, wink of the eye, entertaining charisma that he had allowed him to get very close to his victims.
Mm-hmm. That really rocked the church in Ireland. You include statistics of the number of people, and it's a very Catholic country, as we know. The number of people who go to Mass now, it's just plummeted.
It has plummeted. And I think the government of Ireland did a number of reports on various archdioceses in Ireland that chronicled clerical abuse of minors. More important was the chronicling of the cover-up of that abuse, which took place over many, many decades. That was, I think, the thing that so shocked people in Ireland. And, you know, to be a Catholic in Ireland is to be Irish, I mean, particularly in the Republic of Ireland, because nationalism is very much associated with being Catholic. It's almost like a blood type. So this is left, but people have been so enraged at the way in which the hierarchy has let them down, has deceived them, by covering up the crimes of priests in their employ, that they have left the church in droves.
Yeah. And let's talk about why so little, if any, police involvement in this. It's hard to understand, isn't it, that this criminal behavior is something that's just covered up by the church instead of, as a matter of course, you would go to the police and say, we've got a criminal activity going on here. There's a criminal in our midst. It's serious business, and instead, the police just aren't contacted.
Well, sometimes they're not contacted, and sometimes they are contacted, but unfortunately they go right back to the predator to ask whether or not the predator is involved. I mean, and that happened in the Father Murphy case. There was an instance in which police were told about possible abuse, and they went to Father Murphy and said, oh, you can't listen to them. They're retarded. Retarded was the word used.
Goodness gracious. In other countries, has it been a matter that has been dealt with by civil courts, or has the church tried to deal with it in their own form of justice?
Well, you know, I think the first and most important thing is openness. That is to say, to reckon with this problem and to bring it out in the open. I think for a long time, I mean, you raised importantly the issue of civil authorities or law enforcement authorities. You know, in the United States and in Ireland in particular, I think also in Italy and other places, there had been some slack given to the church, because the church was so reputable, because these were men who were supposed to be morally pure. And so there was a reluctance to investigate. And I think also a sense of authority, too. I think parents also were reluctant to think ill of priests. They were tremendous authority figures. So I think for a long, long time there was a resistance to believe that this could be going on, which really gets to a bigger issue that goes even outside the church, which is, you know, what I would call noble cause corruption. That is to say, mm-hmm. a belief that because you're good, you can do no wrong. Well, it turns out that people in power believe that, and I would include in this case priests and bishops, but also, you know, people, say, at Penn State, for example. But also the parishioners. There is a willingness to accept the word of people in power, sometimes at odds even with one's own children.
And we both know that growing up Catholic, what our families, I'll bet it was true of you too, that your elder aunts and uncles were just... the church could do absolutely no wrong. The father was really God in a human form. It was just a blind loyalty to a church. And in my family, it was among people who were pretty intelligent people. But there, you just didn't question anything.
There's a reason they call it blind faith.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now we're talking about blind and deaf. I mean, I think it's the senses that sometimes are overcome by a sense of blind faith, and that is a serious problem. Look, I can remember when I was going to get married, and I remember thinking that it would be I don't know, out of sentimental affection, I thought I would get the priest who had given me my first communion to conduct the wedding. And I quickly found myself in his presence being terribly afraid and also lying to him in ways about whether or not I was living with my girlfriend at the time.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, and I walked out of the meeting, you know, thinking, what's happened? how have I devolved into that child, you know, who saw the priest pass by and was terribly, terribly afraid?
Well, show him your film now, if he's still around. Yeah, you'll redeem yourself. Alex Gibney is our guest, Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker and director of Taxi to the Dark Side. His new film is extremely powerful, Mea Maxima Culpa, Silence in the House of God, about the child sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Church. You can see the film Friday night at 7 o'clock at the Oriental Theater in Milwaukee. It is the premiere of this film. And tomorrow night, Alex's film, Taxi to the Dark Side, will show at 6:45, also at the Oriental. And Alex will be part of a question and answer afterwards. There's a link to all of his appearances on our show page. Go to WPR.org, click on the Kathleen Dunn Show. We also want to take some phone calls. I know that there are groups in Milwaukee because there has been so much protest and because of the horrendous activities that took place at St. John's School for the Deaf here in Milwaukee, and the long history here and the long history of the Archdiocese. Many of you, I'm sure, listening have some familiarity, firsthand familiarity with these cases. Our phone number for on air is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation this hour. All right, Alex Gibney will remain with us this hour. We are asking you, we're taking just a few minutes to ask for your support of the programs that you enjoy. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener supported. We are in our fall membership drive. Rhonda Fanning is with me, and we are asking you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to make a gift in support of the programs that you count on.
Last hour, we had a goal of 50 pledges, and we heard from 64 listeners.
Hey,
so
I love it.
Everyone
I love
last
it.
Hour.
Great.
And right now, some exciting news, Kathleen.
Oh, good.
We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $1,000.
Ah.
This generous match is offered by Marlene from Greendale, Wisconsin. It's her way of encouraging you to join her in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Get your pledge doubled right now.
Oh, that's great.
At WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Take advantage of that. Those things don't come around all that often. You might not know that high schools and colleges regularly use WPR programs as part of their curriculum, and educators have recognized that their students can learn a lot about current events, great books, history, and so much more from listening to the discussions on Wisconsin Public Radio. Moms and dads and grandparents, those of us who drive young people around, know that eventually those young people will also be listening to Wisconsin Public Radio because we play it on our radio all the time. We're happy to be a part of those car moments, classroom moments. Consider a donation right now because you, too, appreciate that WPR is an educational resource that's available throughout the state. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving to WPR is easy. All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two a week and a few minutes of your time. A pledge of $1 a week adds up to $52 a year. A pledge of $2 a week comes out to about $104 a year. With your pledge, you'll enjoy this and other WPR programs all year long. So please make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
Everything that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio is the result of thoughtful preparation. We do our homework so that you can get the highest quality radio programs. Thank you for making this professionalism possible with your support. Please give now. It's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, this is Melissa Block with NPR News. Ever toss change in the tip jar at the coffee shop or the deli? Then think about that as a model for supporting public radio. Consider, if you throw just a quarter in the tip jar every day you buy coffee, then you'd be spending $1.25 a week on tips. That's more than $60 a year. You don't think twice about tossing in those coins. And exactly how was the service? Sometimes good, sometimes not. Well, for the same $60, you can help keep all of your favorite programs on the air. And you don't even have to give it all at once. Simply sign up as a monthly sustainer. $5 will be charged to your credit card each month for as long as you'd like. It's like having a public radio tip jar, only you know that the money going into it is for a great radio service. Here's how to sign up.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Rhonda Fanning, and we are asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe your gift is $50 or $100 or $500. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount. At WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think about the amount of time you spend listening to WPR in the car. Weekdays, you get news and issues. Weekends, you get laughs and music. You make great use of your time when you listen in the car. You get to where you're going, but you also get information and inspiration. Your life is enriched. Your time is enjoyable every time you get behind the wheel. Your gift helps make the quality time you spend with us in your car or anywhere possible at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we want to remind you that we have this dollar-for-dollar matchup. It's up to $1,000 in effect right now, offered by Marlene from Greendale. So when you give right now, your gift of $50 turns into $100. $100 into $200. Hey, you got the idea. Take advantage of this match to make your gift go even further in paying for programs like this one. Get your pledge match dollar for dollar right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listeners make the work we do here at Wisconsin Public Radio worthwhile, but members make our work possible. We love bringing you intelligent talk every day. In fact, it's a privilege to do so. But you couldn't get all these great programs if members didn't kick in nearly 40% of our budget. So become a member right now. Help make WPR possible with your gift of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's probably been longer than you realize since you last gave to WPR. Please, we're asking you to keep your membership active. Donate now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you very much. This is the Ideas Network. Alex Gibney is our guest, Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker, director of Taxi to the Dark Side. His new film, which will have its world premiere in Milwaukee on Friday, is Mea Maxima Culpa, Silence in the House of God. It's about the child sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Church, and a good portion of the film actually centers on the bravery of several of the students who now are older men at St. John's School for the Deaf, and the horrendous abuse that they suffered and their fight to let it be known that criminal activity was taking place within those walls. All right, and then we want to tell you, you can see Mea Maxima Culpa Friday night, Oriental Theater in Milwaukee. We have a ton of phone calls that have come in for Alex, so we're going to go to calls. Jerry in La Crosse is our first caller. Hi, Jerry. Jerry, are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
I have a question. In the state of Missouri, the Supreme Court there has ruled that the Catholic Church can't be sued for how it moves priests around because of the First Amendment, freedom of religion. And I was wondering if you thought that the unprecedented involvement of the church in politics this last summer around the concept of religious freedom was focused toward getting a Supreme Court ruling that would free them from these lawsuits nationwide?
That's a very good question. I can't pretend to know, you know, whether that was part of the design of the whole fracas surrounding contraception, which is, I think, what you're talking about. So I don't know. I don't know if that's what they were thinking. I mean, I was kind of appalled at the way the Catholic Church inserted itself into domestic politics, but that's another story.
Thank you, Jerry, for the call. Dan is next. Dan in Beloit. Hi, Dan.
Yes. I like the great subject. Tragedy this happened. I'm a Christian. I'm not a Catholic, but I am a Christian. And I think, you know, if the church actually followed, the Catholic Church followed what the Bible said, it did state that, in Peter, I believe, that, you know, Peter said that he follows Christ and he devotes his life to it. But he also states in there, if you can't abstain, there's other things, you know, that don't, basically, in these days, don't be a priest. You know, serve God in other ways. And I think if the church allowed these priests to say, hey, you know, I'm having temptations, then they should be able to step down at that point, or they should be encouraged to.
Alex.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I heard the question there, but I think, look, the issue of celibacy comes up a lot, obviously, relating to this matter. One of the things we say in the film is that, you know, studies have shown that over 50% of the priests who have taken vows of celibacy are not, in fact, celibate. So, you know, there is a kind of central hypocrisy inside the church. And that, of course, leads to a culture of secrecy. And that culture of secrecy then further compounds, you know, issues in church law, canon law, which also demands secrecy and sometimes investigating some of these, violations. So it's a serious problem for that reason. I mean, I think there are some who would say that you can teach priests to be celibate if you engage the idea that everybody's a human being, everybody has desires. But there's very little of that that goes on, so far as I understand. More importantly, I think, is this culture of secrecy, which is encouraged precisely because the rules of the church are so frequently not followed by the church itself.
There are some wild stories in the film. One, I had no idea this was the case, that the church tried to buy an island for some of these deviants?
Yes.
Or criminals, is a better word.
Well, there was a man named Fitzgerald who was part of an order called the Servants of the Paraclete. And his job was often to take care of priests who were either drunk or further on, ones who seemed to be recurring pedophiles, who were sick in the way that they were attracted to young children. And so he felt that they couldn't really be cured, but they needed to be separated from the population. So his view was, why don't we buy an island? And he put a down payment on an island called Carriacou, just off the coast of Grenada, which the Servants of the Paraclete briefly felt might house all the pedophiles. So he would have had Pedophile Island in the Caribbean.
Mm.
But that was abandoned by the Archbishop of Puerto Rico.
Is there, I'm wondering if the issue of celibacy does come up here, or is it a different kind of issue, pedophiles and celibacy? Is the celibacy rule something that would allow more pedophiles to enter this church than other churches, or are the number of pedophiles found equally in, you know, football programs and Catholic churches and Lutheran churches and you name it?
Well, this is an issue of some dispute. I mean, there are many defenders of the Catholic Church who say, no, it's just the same in the Catholic Church as it is everywhere else. I think there are other people who pretty persuasively argue with facts and figures that that's not the case, that the number of pedophiles percentage-wise in the Catholic Church is higher. So you would have to think that there's something about the church that is attracting them, possibly because they're protected or have been protected. Now, you know, American bishops have taken steps to make sure that accusations of pedophilia are reported to civil authorities, which wasn't always the case. But that's not the global policy of the church. So, you know, I think, and we've seen recently in a case in St. Louis where, despite this sort of zero tolerance policy that the church has in place, the church was also found to be protecting a guy who was sort of addicted to pornography of the genitalia of young girls. So, you know, this is it's a serious problem.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to John in Magnolia. Hi, John.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Interesting subject. I guess my main point today would be This is just another example of how the powers that be love the status quo. And I'll just give you a couple quick examples. You know, Fast and Furious, a lot of lowers down in the Justice Department said, hey, some really screwed up stuff is going on. We need to put an end to this. And a lot of those people were summarily dismissed. Nothing was ever done. Let's take Penn State. You know, a guy said, hey, what's going on? It's really screwed up. We need to stop this. Oh, we'll make a note of it. Have a nice day. And this, what's going on in the Catholic Church is an extreme example of how the powers that be love the status quo, and they focus on the appearance instead of the substance. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for the call.
Again, this is another instance where I'm not sure I heard the question, but I it was an interesting comment, and I'll pick up on it. I think fundamentally this film, like a lot of my films, is about abuse of power. And I think that's where you really see the problem, that that's what connects the sex scandals in the Catholic Church with, say, Penn State, for example, where institutions are so concerned to burnish their reputations and to prevent scandal that they end up causing an even worse scandal by covering up crimes that they should be properly investigating. And that really is the heart of the matter. And that's what we all, as citizens, you know, never mind members of the Catholic Church, but as citizens, have to be attentive to, that institutions will always seek to protect themselves. And we have to, whenever we feel that gnawing in the gut or we think something's wrong, we have to raise our hands and say something about it.
Yeah, because what also gets lost in your film really portrays, by listening to these, then they were young boys, but listening to these men now who have been fighting this and trying to have their voices heard, and they can't speak, so they're signing so that other people can speak for them, to talk about the abuse they face. That is what's so criminal here, and those voices, and you make mention of this in the film later on, that when the church apologizes, they're thinking, oh, these priests, we're sorry about these priests. What about the victims in all of this?
Right. That's right. And that is one of the This this goes back to the idea of institutions protecting themselves. One of the most terrible things about this clerical sex abuse crisis is that there seems to have been far more concern for the priests than for the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there are a number of priests who will disagree with me on this, but I think the record bears me out. There is an appalling instance in the film itself where, and speaking of the deafness, which of course, you know, you could think who could be more vulnerable? These were children who lived in a dormitory, and they couldn't hear the predator coming for them.
I know. Oh, I know.
And so, at one point in a deposition, Archbishop Cousins was asked, in trying to understand what was going on with Murphy, did you reach out and ask, the victims? What about the students? Did you talk to them? And he said no. And the next question was, well, why not? He said, well, they're deaf. And so that to me was a kind of a terrible metaphor for the unwillingness of the church to reach out to its victims.
Mm. There's also dramatic footage of when, I think it's four, maybe it's three, of these young boys who are abused, who are three, who are older now, confront Father Murphy at his summer place in northern Wisconsin.
Yes. That was something that it was one man named Bob Bulger, who sadly is no longer with us, in the sort of flush of protests in the early 1970s, got a number of students who had been abused by Father Murphy together, and they got very worked up about it. And over the years, when they saw that Father Murphy had not been held to account, they finally took it upon themselves to go confront him themselves. And they took along a video camera, and they filmed this encounter with him up at his country place in northern Wisconsin. One of the most remarkable moments of that, and Murphy sort of shunts them off and apologizes briefly, even as he says that was a long time ago. There's a caretaker from that he has with him, a woman named Grace, who keeps screaming. She's deaf also, and they're actually signing, but she's screaming in sign language back and forth with one of the deaf men, Bob Bulger, and saying, "You are Catholic, you are Catholic," as if she's saying, you know, you should really take one for the team. The church is more important than your personal suffering. And it is the most terrifying and appalling moment, and riveting, because it's so raw. It's really a remarkable piece of footage. We discovered it among Bob Bulger's effects when we were working with his friends and his family to try and find out some stuff about what it was that he had done to try to focus attention on this issue.
Alex Gibney is our guest. He's an Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker, director of Taxi to the Dark Side. His new film, which will have its world premiere on Friday at the Milwaukee Film Festival, is Mea Maxima Culpa, Silence in the House of God. It is about the child sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Church. You can see the film Friday night at 7 at the Oriental Theater in Milwaukee. Tomorrow night, his film Taxi to the Dark Side will show at 6:45 at the Oriental, and he'll be doing a question and answer after that, and there's a link to all of his appearances. If you go to WPR.org, click on the Kathleen Dunn Show, go to our Facebook page as well for that, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Rhonda Fanning. As regular listeners to this program, you know that you're always going to hear something it's worthwhile, and this hour is certainly a case in point. It's an important discussion, hard as it may be to have. Today we're asking you to put a value on this program. Your gift to WPR is vital. It is a huge part of what keeps us going. Support this program and everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio by making a gift in any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have a goal this hour of 35 pledges. We've already heard from 26 listeners, so we only need 9 more before the end of the hour to make our goal. And for a pledge of $120, you can get a WPR t-shirt. I'm wearing one right now. And
It's a nice t-shirt,
it's pretty
too.
Cool. Yeah.
It's a nice color.
Yep, great design. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You name the issue, you've heard about it on the Ideas Network. Oh, have we ever talked about the issues? We talk politics, science, the environment, history. It's a valuable service. It's the only service like it. You can't find it anywhere else on the radio, really. And I think it's a service worth supporting, and I know you do as well. If you make your contribution of $50 or $100, whatever amount you choose, to support the Ideas Network programs you enjoy, it's your chance to make these programs possible. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving takes just 2 minutes of your time. You tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you would like to pay. Consider using your credit card. It saves time, postage, and paper, and puts your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, take those 2 minutes right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR exists because people contribute. When we all give, our contributions add up to make this program possible. So, you see, your contribution really does make a difference. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's as simple as that. One pledge at a time, and you make this station possible.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I don't think that people fully understand that Wisconsin Public Radio is really the basis from which it all began. I'm constantly telling people that you've got a tremendous resource here. You don't have to contribute. I mean, you can go ahead and take the service for free. I tell them, I contribute so you can listen. That always gets them. Here's this tremendous amount of information, which is commercial-free. It's annoyance-free, certainly. And I've got this terrible aversion to commercials, both on television and especially radio. I don't think the people really understand the value that you have right here just flipping on the radio.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support. Rhonda Fanning is joining me in our studios in Milwaukee. We're asking for your support of the WPR programs you count on. Thank you in advance for your gift of $50, $100, $500, or whatever amount is right for you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've learned about so many issues from Wisconsin Public Radio. For example, on Monday, we talked about the Supreme Court. We talked about the media yesterday. Whatever it is, WPR is here for you, and you rely on the thoughtful conversations you get when you tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio. So invest in your future listening by donating now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I know that you don't listen to Wisconsin Public Radio just once a year. You listen year-round. You can give the same way that you listen by becoming a sustaining member. You make the decision once, and you'll make affordable monthly contributions of, say, $10 or $20 for as long as you wish. It's easy on your budget. It cuts down on paperwork. And new this fall, as a sustainer, you'll automatically be entered in all our drawings and sweepstakes. So don't delay. Become a sustainer at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A $10 a month contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio is just a little over 30 cents a day. When you think about it, you probably spend a lot more than 30 cents a day on things you value less than WPR. So spend a little right now and you'll get a lot in return. Make your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Either way, you'll be investing in a station that you use.
$1 for, and we want you to give now at WPR.org. Donate or call 888-202-2552. We're doing all right here. We'd like seven. What are we looking at? Seven?
Seven more pledges.
Seven more pledges to make our goal this hour, which would be just A-OK. Thank you very much, everybody, for all that you've given and will give. Alex Gibney is our guest this hour. Alex is an Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker. His new movie will have its world premiere at the Oriental Theater as part of the Milwaukee Film Festival. It's the U.S. premiere, actually. It is Mea Maxima Culpa, Silence in the House of God. It's about child sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Church. We have our lines filled with people wanting to talk to you, Alex, so let's go to Kenneth. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. I want to say that what I'm hearing is if a judge in the justice system took bribes, or if a policeman committed a crime, I'm hearing you guys blaming, you know, the whole judicial system and the whole police force. But because I hear you talking about the church, but there are very few individuals who have made very bad judgments and did some very bad things and so forth. But it's a small percentage of people. And it shouldn't be talked about that the Catholic Church is doing this and that.
Alex.
Okay, my response to that. Look, this is a very difficult issue. And the first thing I want to say very boldly is that this film is not in any way, shape, or form questioning the faith of people in the Catholic Church. However, it does look at the role of the hierarchy of the Catholic Church and the role and the way the institution itself acted. This is not just a case of a few bad apples. And that's an argument, you know, that I was often familiar with when I was doing my film on torture. You know, when Abu Ghraib came up, Dick Cheney and others said, oh, that was just a few bad apples. It turns out it was the result of a de facto policy. It's the cover-up of crimes like Father Murphy. Everybody, you know, everyone can accept that there will be pedophiles roving among us. I think the key is, what do we do about them? And did the church respond, in a way that it should have? What you see when you see this film, and I hope that gentleman does see this film, is that it's not just Father Murphy in Wisconsin. There are a lot of priests all over the world who did terrible things. And more appalling than that, is the way their crimes were systematically covered up. And that is a serious problem for which the institution as a whole really needs to be held to account.
And let's talk about the Pope for a moment, because you can't talk about this issue without talking about then Cardinal Ratzinger, who was in charge of the Doctrine of the Faithful, I believe it's called something like that, who had information in that role of all of the charges of sexual abuse, who had all of the files. He is now Pope Benedict the 16th. I'd like for Alex to comment on this, but let's listen to a clip from the movie that talks about him.
Wisconsin.
His first reaction is the horror that a priest could do something like this. That's telling. It wasn't these poor victims. That was not his first reaction. His first reaction was, it despoiled the priesthood, this sacred institution.
Yet when he was a cardinal, it had been his job to examine every one of these sex abuse cases. Ratzinger met with John Paul every Friday. Did he stay silent? Or did he speak with John Paul about Maciel?
Ratzinger would have liked to open an investigation, but he was stopped by the Secretary of State, Cardinal Sodano.
Sodano's ability to protect Maciel put Ratzinger in a difficult position as more and more victims of Maciel came forward.
There's a lot in that. We need to talk about who Maciel was, certainly. And then what kind of role Cardinal Ratzinger had in holding all this information, looking through all this information. And was it something that the Pope knew about, or this is where it gets, you know, there's a lot here.
There is a lot here. And one of the most interesting aspects of the Lawrence Murphy case in Milwaukee is that investigation into that case uncovered documents that really show the long arm of the Vatican and how the Vatican actually knew about Father Murphy back into the 60s, and certainly once again was reminded of him in 1974, but did nothing. And in the case of Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict the 16th, as of 2001, for a long time he was head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which did look into crimes of the confessional. Anytime you use the confessional to commit a crime like sexual abuse. But as of 2001, Pope John Paul put him in charge of all the sex abuse crimes. So he knows more about this issue than any person on the planet. And I think he is legitimately horrified by these acts as a person. But what we discover is that when he's put to the test to bring some justice to the victims and some punishment to those like Maciel, and Maciel's referred to in that clip, who was a horrible sex abuser in the church, who nevertheless was let off the hook for many years by John Paul II because he raised massive amounts of money for the church. When push comes to shove, Benedict does not act. He fails that test to publicly sanction Maciel and to frock him. So we have to ask the question, you know, once again, is the priest more important than the victims? And this becomes the central problem for the Catholic Church.
And when you, because you are totally immersed in this, you've put this film together, when you try to answer the question, why did he not defrock him? Why didn't he take direct action? The answer is what? Because there was too much money involved here for the church, or what was it?
Well, we don't know. But what we do know is that, you know, it's very interesting because this is a kind of key mystery story at the heart of the Vatican part of the story in the film. And just as John Paul is dying, suddenly Ratzinger feels that he has the freedom to investigate Maciel, and he sends his prosecutor to New York and Mexico City to gather evidence. And it appears they're moving forward to a canonical trial where they would defrock him. But when Benedict becomes Pope, that is dropped. And we don't know why. We don't know. Was there a deal cut? Did he simply decide that as Pope, now his job is to protect the church? We don't know the answer to that mystery, but we do know what happened, and we do know he failed a fundamental test.
Mm. Has the Vatican responded to your film?
No, not yet. I don't know yet if they've seen it, but I'm hopeful that they will. We certainly asked over and over again for members of the congregation, the current congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, to talk to us, but they declined.
Mm. Well, you are an Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker. I would find it hard to believe that they wouldn't see this film at some point.
I think they will.
Yeah, I think so, too. Well, Alex, thank you so much. It's such an important film, and it must have been one hard one to put together. I mean,
it was very tough. It was very tough. You know, when you look at something that's so egregious as this, when you're talking about crimes against children, defenseless children, it's a very, very tough thing to reckon with. And yet, you know, I think what steeled me in my resolve was the strength of these survivors who really were heroes. And I owe any success of the film to them.
Mm. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks so much.
Alex Gibney, Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker. His film, Mea Maxima Culpa, will be shown its U.S. premiere Friday night at 7 at the Oriental Theater in Milwaukee. It's part of the Milwaukee Film Festival. All of this information, another of his films will be shown tomorrow. You can go to The Kathleen Dunn Show or go to WPR.org and click on Kathleen Dunn. So, that was interesting. Switching gears here for just one moment, we do want to let you know that we are in our fall membership drive. Rhonda Fanning is joining me here in Milwaukee. You count, I know, on WPR's Ideas Network for talk about issues that matter to you. This one matters to us that we just discussed this hour, and we count on you to keep these discussions on the air. Make a gift of any amount right now. Give, please, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And some happy news, Marlene in Greendale, who offered up the dollar-for-dollar match up to $1,000, will be happy to learn that we made that challenge.
Thank you.
So thank you to everyone
everybody
who helped make that challenge possible and who contributed earlier. We're still looking for three more pledges before the end of the hour to make the goal of 35 pledges. Be the next person to help us along with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I know you've been engrossed in the conversation, and wait till you see the film, with Alex Gibney about his career and the film Mea Maxima Culpa. Make this hour an important one for us. Take a few minutes. It's important for you as well. You will make many future hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you've been wondering how you can do more for the station that's such a big part of your life, consider making a donation of $1,200. Listener support is crucial to WPR's future. If you would like to do more than you've done before, and you can afford to make a leadership contribution of $100 a month, do that now. A gift of any amount is appreciated, however, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You may want to consider becoming a sustaining member with a regular monthly gift. It cuts down on mailing costs. Your donation will then go further. It has automatic renewal, so you don't even need to think about it. Help sustain the Kathleen Dunn Show, the Larry Mueller Show, everything else you hear on WPR. Show your support with a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I don't think that people fully understand that Wisconsin Public Radio is really the basis from which it all began. I'm constantly telling people that you've got a tremendous resource here. You don't have to contribute. I mean, you can go ahead and take the service for free. I tell them, I contribute so you can listen. That always gets them. Here's this tremendous amount of information, which is commercial-free. It's annoyance-free, certainly. And I've got this terrible aversion to commercials, both on television and especially radio. I don't think the people really understand the value that you have right here just flipping on the radio.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Whether your pledge is $50, $1,200, or anything above or in between, we appreciate and count on your gift.
You might spend more money than you realize during the course of a day. A cup of coffee here, a bit for lunch, a newspaper, adds up to a lot of money over the course of a month. You also listen to WPR every day. It's just as important as those other daily things you enjoy, so spend some money on it. Pledge your support now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is your radio station. It's the one that you wake up with in the morning. It rides with you on your commute, offers companionship during the day. And the beauty of public radio is that you get to decide how you would like to pay for the programs you enjoy. Many first-time donors give $25 or $60. Your gift, combined with those of other loyal WPR listeners, add up to what we need to make Wisconsin Public Radio great. So become our next new member right now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. How are we doing, Rhonda?
We need three more pledges in the next few minutes. And for a pledge of $120, don't forget you can get the WPR T-shirt.
Yes, you can.
And that's WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
And go to our Facebook page. All I want to say, well, I want to say a couple things. One is Abraham Lincoln. Go to our Facebook page, Abraham Lincoln. And Rhonda and Brett will be featured. They're so shy they don't want me to say this. They will be featured on our Facebook page today as well. The Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks, everybody, for pledging. Thanks for listening.